Okay, I think we're good to go.
Are we good to go?
I think so.
Cool. We'll get us going.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Trade Raiders Podcast, the comic book club where we read a different trade paperback every single week.
Yes, we do.
I'm Daniel. You're Nathan. We're brothers. We read comics.
Sure do. How are you feeling this week, Daniel? How you doing?
Feeling real good. It's been a good week. How about yourself?
Has been a good week. Lots of things been happening, I feel like, and I'm just excited to be here and talk about comic books.
Is that right?
Yeah. Lots of things that work for me, and I feel like I've just been running around a whole bunch because we're preparing for a trip, but I like comics more than anything. Excited to pod.
Me too. Very excited to pod. What do we do first here on this podcast, Nathan?
Well, we do a couple different things. If you look at the episode notes or the description, whatever you want to call it, it's going to have a couple different time codes so you can jump around. The first segment is going to be the news. We've got some new series coming up, some new animated shows and things like that that are comic book based. Then we're going to talk about Star Wars, The High Republic, Edge of Balance. It's a very long title.
I know. It'll look good on the episode, on Spotify.
Yeah, it looks good on the actual trade, but when I was like typing it out, I was like, God damn, this is a really long title.
It's a mouthful.
It's like Star Wars, : The High Republic, : Edge of Balance. So lots of going on there. Or you can go to our back matter where we talk about the back matter of the trade, or just the pull list where we talk about the comics that we got for the week and that we read for the week and what we watched for the week. So we'll get straight into the news this week. And it's a pretty dry week for me, honestly.
Yeah, a lot of nothing.
Sometimes it's a bit of a slower week, and that's okay.
I did want to bring up that I was watching Supernatural recently, and around like the middle of season 9, there's this character that they have to go meet up, and she was reading Lock and Key.
Oh, cool.
I was like, oh, I know that book. We reviewed that book.
Yeah, we did. We read it.
And so I was like, okay.
I wonder if she's listening to that episode of the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
That book was all right.
That just made me really excited.
Yeah, that's funny. It's cool seeing comics like on TV, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And it's so much cooler when you could recognize them for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, you'd see them on, like, the Big Bang Theory, and you see, like, Scott Snyder's Batman or whatever, and you'd be like, I've read that shit. That's cool that it's on a television, you know?
In The Walking Dead, Carl, in, like, the first season, reads, like, Invincible.
Yeah. Or, like, in Invincible, he's reading, like, Underwater Welder by Jeff Lemire, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, he talks about it.
So, shit like that is always pretty cool to me.
Definitely.
So, nice. Probably the biggest news that I didn't know was happening is that there's a new Marvel series coming to Hulu on November 17th called Marvel's Hitmonkey.
I know, dude. Isn't that so weird?
Did you know anything about this?
I had no idea what Hitmonkey was, and there's honestly not a lot to look up either.
Yeah, there's really not. So he's just like an assassin that's a monkey, and I think he can talk, and he wears little sunglasses.
It's basically like John Wick if he was a monkey,
yeah,
I think.
Which, you know, it's a great idea,
I think. And then, like, Jason Sudeikis is in it.
Yeah, Olivia Munn, Jason Sudeikis, and George Takei. Takei, if you know who that is. I don't really know, but
it's,
yeah.
It's so random. Hulu's, like, picking some random properties to make shit out of.
I guess they're just like, Marvel, what can you give us? And they're like, MODOK, Hitmonkey.
You can do fucking Cloak and Dagger.
You can do, you know, Stilt Man if you want.
So yeah,
they're just picking like the most weirdest properties. But I mean, it looks pretty good, actually.
There's only like one trade of it, and Daniel Way was the creator. I know him from a long run on Deadpool that he did.
Thunderbolts,
stuff like that. So this is his like creation, and apparently he got a show, and I'm going to watch it because it looks fun.
Yeah, it does look a lot of fun. And, you know, Jason Sudeikis is on some good shit, you know, definitely. Olivia Munn as well. So
it'd be cool to see this. We should read the book for that.
Yeah, we should. That'd be so fun. Yeah. November 17th is when that comes out. I don't think I've seen Hitmonkey too much in comics unless he was like in the background or something.
Yeah.
I've never read a story where like Hitmonkey is like a focal like character, like a focal point of a character.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm interested to see what this is, but it looks pretty fun.
Apparently Mark Miller is coming out with a new Image book in 2022, mm-hmm, called The Night Club.
Yes.
Have you heard about this?
I saw it, that it was announced. And
is this basically not just the same thing as the All-Nighter?
No. Because these are vampires, but they're
teen vampires.
Yes.
That want to fight crime.
Correct.
That's like the same thing without the diner.
The central premise is a group of teenagers get bitten by vampires and gain all the related powers we traditionally associate with the bloodsuckers. Where this one diverges from most vampire stories is that these vampires decide to use their newfound gift slash curse to become superheroes. So it seems just kind of like a basic vampire story, but with sort of teens, and like that's the reason why they get.
I kept seeing him tweeting like, this is what would happen if actual people became vampires. I'm like, I think all in like stories, like, yeah, all people were people at one point and then become vampires. So
yeah,
it just seemed odd.
And it's interesting because we know Mark Miller's writing it. It's also part of like his Netflix deal, but published through Image, whatever that's about. Hopefully to get, or they think it'll hopefully get picked up in some form or another by Netflix. But I guess there's like a couple different artists tied to it. So Greg Capullo, he did the cover for it that it was announced mm-hmm. with. But I guess he's also doing some of the interior art. But we also have Ben Temple Smith and Ben Oliver, who I'm not super familiar with. And yeah, so he wanted to bring it to life on paper before moving it through a TV development process is what he said.
Okay.
So yeah, it looks all right. I don't know if I'm immediately drawn to it just because it's just like, what if kids got bit by vampires? And I don't know. That seems like I need a little bit more of like a twist.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mark Miller's a smart guy and he makes cool things, so maybe it'll be good. I don't know.
Jeff Lemire posted a picture of Microsoft Word. It said Black Hammer : the end.
I saw that.
Which breaks my heart.
Yeah.
I don't know if this means it's the actual end of the Black Hammer universe or if it's like the end of this upcoming run. Like,
I think it's the end of the main Black Hammer title. But he did say that it would be a while before we see it because there's also going to be like a Madame Dragonfly miniseries and a couple other things that are like going on before like we even get to the end of like the main story of Black Hammer.
Yeah.
So he said it was going to be a while, but I did see that.
Yeah. I'm seeing the comment now. 12 issues of Black Hammer Reborn, the Incredible Unteens,
mm-hmm.
and then the Madame Dragonfly thing. So yeah, interesting.
It's kind of,
I mean, if it ends, I'll probably just like reread it.
Yeah.
Because like there's a lot of it. So
it's kind of good knowing that there's going to be like an end and that's like not going to like keep going and going and going, you know, in a way.
But it would be good still.
It would still be good. Yeah. But, you know, if we already know that the end is made is probably going to happen sometime in like 2022 or 2023. I don't know. I don't know how Jeff Lemire works actually, because he's got like a million projects all lined up. So it could be like 2025 or whatever. but yeah, once that ends, it feels like all of like the Black Hammer main storyline won't be like a crazy amount, you know?
Right. Yeah. It seems like there was always like a main title that was going on, and then all the spinoffs were just like next to it.
Yeah.
But it's not like he had like two main storylines going on.
Yeah.
So.
But all the spinoffs are so good. So like if you include everything, which you probably should because they all kind of bring their own sort of thing to the table, it is a lot of Black Hammer. But obviously they are still spinoffs, so you don't need to read them if you don't want to. But every single one that I've read, I've absolutely fucked with.
Right.
So yeah, probably around 60-ish issues. Maybe, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of...
Because I think all the main ones were like 12, right?
The spinoffs?
No, the main titles.
Oh, the main titles were in like chunks of 12, yeah.
Yeah, and the spinoffs were like 5, 6-ish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, around like 60, it feels like.
Yeah, so pretty cool. That's all I have for news.
Okay. Nathan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar
uh-huh.
is joining Substack, and he said in an article that Scott Snyder is his favorite comic book writer.
Oh, good for him.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar reads comics. That's so sick.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I have a favorite writer. Like,
yeah.
he reads comics enough to where he has a favorite writer, and that's dope.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was worth mentioning.
Yeah, that is cool.
There was a Red Band Injustice trailer that was released.
I saw that happened, but I didn't watch it.
It's basically just like the part where he kills the Joker.
Okay.
And I think that was the only really bad thing about it. But spoilers.
I mean, that's kind of like the premise for Injustice
yeah.
a little bit. So
Nathan, Star Wars Visions has been confirmed as not canon.
I kind of figured that was the case.
Me too, but I guess it was just never confirmed.
When I saw like a big lightsaber umbrella, I was like, maybe this isn't the normal thing.
Yo, that shit was crazy.
It was cool.
I was like, oh, fuck.
But I was like, I don't know if I could see like, you know, normal Jedi using that kind of thing.
Because you don't know when in time that is.
Yeah, we don't.
So who knows?
So is Visions out already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Came out today.
Okay.
I watched a couple of them.
I didn't get the chance to, but I'm excited to hear about it in the pull list.
Yeah.
Time code in the description.
And then Snow Angels, that Comixology series, is coming uh-huh. to print.
Sweet.
Sweet.
That's good. Let me guess. Is it Dark Horse?
Yeah, you got it, Nathan.
Dark Horse is like, oh, you printed this digitally? Let me do it.
Yeah.
Whether it's Comixology or
you mean
Substack.
I just have to press right-click print and then I make money?
Yeah, let's control A, control P, because that's how it works in comics.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's a good book. I haven't read any of season two yet of Snow
Neither
Angels.
Have I, yeah.
It's all there, though. I can read it whenever.
I have it borrowed and downloaded. I just haven't gotten to it.
Yeah, I see each issue come out. I'm like, fuck, I need to read that.
But
so
it's like three issues, like a season or whatever. And it's hardly a season because the next issue comes out like very soon.
Does it? Okay. Because I finished season one right when like season two was about to come out for Snow Angels. So I wasn't sure how long the wait is, but yeah.
Yeah, it felt like nothing.
So that's cool. I wonder how long they're going to be doing that because Jock has that Batman series coming out in December. So I wonder if there's like another series or another season. Is that confirmed at all? Or
I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Good book, though. Check it out if you have Comixology.
Definitely. So let's get into the book.
Let's get into it.
We got a Star Wars book, a Star Wars manga coming from the High Republic series. It's like in there somewhere. I don't think you need to read anything else in order to understand this.
So
it's very self-contained.
So it's Star Wars, but in the High Republic era.
Right, which is about 1,000 years before like the Phantom Menace.
So an even longer time ago in a galaxy even further away?
Perhaps, but
oh, you have it.
Well,
in print?
No, it's like the same. Yeah, I got it in print.
See that? That's cool.
Yeah. So they have like novels written by Charles Soule and other, and there's like other books written by other people, mm-hmm. and then there's the graphic novel, and then there's like a kids' graphic novel called The High Republic Adventures. But this is the manga that came out recently.
So, I think that's very cool that they're kind of going into the High Republic era because it's essentially to me there's Jedi's and stuff running around, but it's not. You don't have to know who Darth Vader is or who Obi-Wan or Luke Skywalker is. It's just like, if you like the sort of general Star Wars idea without all the like storylines or whatever, mm-hmm. you could still enjoy it that way.
Yeah, I think that's really great to get away from that source material because it always seems like something is connected back to the main storyline.
Yeah,
you know?
That can get a little confusing, exhausting, or just limit storytelling a little bit.
A little tedious too.
Yeah. So it's cool just kind of going into Star Wars with a fresh start and you're like, I'm just going to see all new characters in the series.
Right.
So yeah, very, very long time ago. So yeah, and this is an American manga.
Correct. It reads left to right.
But it's still black and white and very much manga inspired art style. Yeah.
Yes.
Even in reading this book, you can't read it in Comixology in the guided view.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it gives you this message and it says, this book is presented in manga fix format, a reading experience preferred by some manga publishers that does not use a guided view. So like if I were try to go and use the guided view, it wouldn't let me. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So
gotcha.
It reads just like a manga, except backwards or forwards, I would say. Because manga is backwards.
Right.
So yeah.
Well, to them, it's forwards. So like in Japan, so to Japanese it's backwards.
I know.
I think they did a great job like structurally making this as close to like a manga as possible. Mm-hmm. Just the only thing that made it not that is that it was left to right reading.
Yeah.
Well, which is cool. Like a lot of the onomatopoeia stuff and like the thought bubbles that like aren't even in bubbles, they're just kind of next to their head.
Yeah.
They do that a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really interesting manga technique, I guess, that's used in here.
Right.
And it was kind of cool to see, honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, this is our first manga, technically, that we've read, if you can call it that.
Yeah, true.
As close as we'll get for a while, hopefully. I'm just kidding. So, yeah, Star Wars, : The High Republic, Edge of Balance.
Edge of Balance.
Yeah. A title with two colons. What more could you want?
Story by Shima Shinya and Justina Ireland.
Yep.
Art by Mizuki Sakakibara.
Sakakibara, yeah. Great art, by the way.
Great art.
Yeah.
Killer.
Really, really insane. So this manga doesn't have particular issues, so I kind of just broke it up into like four different parts, essentially, just to like make sense in my head.
Okay.
But we'll get into it. So like the intro of it, you know, it's a longer time ago in a galaxy further away. But we get right into the action kind of with like a flashback introducing our main character, who's named Lily, and she experiences some debris from space crashing down on her like home planet. And there's like a bunch of, they look like meteors, but it's debris from space just crashing down and causing a ruckus. but she's saved by a Jedi named Stellan.
Wait, is this Lily in the...
I think so.
I think it's like just...
Because she remembers it later, which is strange to me, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, we're introduced to this Jedi named Stellan, and then we kind of just jumped forward to the present, where Lily is a Jedi herself on a ship with a Wookiee Jedi master named Arkoff, and they're like helping some refugees relocate to a planet called Banshee, where there's also a new Jedi temple put in. But I really like seeing a Wookiee as a Jedi.
That shit's so cool.
It is fucking awesome.
Because then they always fuck it up too. Like they always like are just killing it as Jedis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just give a bunch of Wookiees lightsabers.
Yeah, there should be way more Wookiees as Jedi.
And it's always cool that they got their braided beards.
Yeah, dude.
They look all hipster.
And they talk in like Kashyyyk. Kashyyykan?
What is it called? Probably.
Yeah. So like all the dialogue from them is just like the...
Oh, wait, isn't it just Wookiean?
It might be Wookiean.
I could be wrong.
We might need to look it up on Wikipedia, the Star Wars Wikipedia. But yeah, they talk in like that Kashyyyk native language. So it's still just like this Wookiee character speaking gibberish to us. And then Lily, who's like next to her, is like, okay, yeah, I see what you mean, you know?
Yeah.
But what's also funny is that sometimes the writer chooses when to translate like what the Wookiee is saying by just putting like a translation like next to his face. And it only happens like one or two times, but there's like a legit translation like next to his face about what he's trying to say, because it doesn't seem like there's a natural way to like express what he's like trying to say.
It seems like whoever he's talking to, they kind of rebuttal like what he says.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good point that you made about this thing that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. So
good idea.
So anyway, Lily is contemplating whether she would have the same sort of resolve as Jedi Stellan if she was faced with a tough situation and stuff. And then Master Arkoff is teaching her Jedi stuff. I don't know, spitting out some wisdom. But then Lily preps the passengers to land on Banshee as they're almost there. And there's a refugee there with some seeds brought in like a container from the, like the last planet that they were at to hopefully plant on Banshee. But when they land, we meet two little kids that are like aspiring Jedi named Vivnia and Nima, and then we also see Lily's Padawan, Kieran. So we're immediately introduced to a bunch of characters, but I think they do a good job of really showing you who's the more important ones because they're on the page more, and then like they call each other by their names a lot, so it's pretty easy to track. But Vivnia is like that same species or race or whatever as Ahsoka Tano, it looks like, and I think that character design in like a manga format is perfect. Like, it works so well.
Yeah, it really does.
Because she looks like super cute as like this little kid and got the big tendrils or whatever coming from her head. But when they land on Banshee, it's like a big like foresty planet, and I feel like it must be so hard to like balance everything on a page if it's just like black and white, like especially like a forest landscape where there's like a lot of detail. But I feel like you can kind of make out the shapes and everything pretty well, because normally that's where like coloring I feel like comes into play a lot in traditional like American comics.
Yeah, I think it's just like, you know, the buildings and stuff are very structural and straight.
Yeah.
And then like everything is like all the trunks of trees are like kind of spiraled, and they do shade in this. So it's not just like black and white.
Yeah, there's like gray tones.
So you're able to kind of differentiate that way. But it was done really well here.
Yeah. There's also a new Jedi temple on this planet. And it got me thinking, like, who decides where the new Jedi temples go? You know,
it's probably
who funds it, how
they decide like where to put new football teams and stuff like that.
Oh, true.
Like, oh, should we move to Austin? There's a lot of people in Austin kind of thing.
Banshee's kind of boring. Should we put a Jedi temple there?
Yeah.
And like, how long does it take? Who does it? It's just like very interesting to think like...
These people do it. That's why they're there.
Oh, the Banshee people.
No. Like these Jedis, like they're to make sure that that's all set up nicely.
Is there just a guy that's there constantly scouting out like different planets? Like, oh, this is another forest planet. We need one of those.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And so... I also want to say that the artist draws Master Arkoff like majestic as fuck, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Like Chewbacca feels like a little scrappy to me.
Yeah, he's a little dirty.
Yeah, he's a bit dirty.
Down and dirty.
Yeah, and this dude, Master Arkoff, looks like he drinks tea on like a mountain or some shit. Like he's got just like multiple braided parts of his beard, and like his hair, he looks like he conditions and he like combs it.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a very like cool looking character.
Like, he's got, like, a Wookiee barber that trims it up.
Yeah, exactly. So there's some foreshadowing stuff as well. that sort of happens. And like Lily is talking to a doctor saying how much she wants to protect Banshee and the people on there. And then Master Arkoff walks into a room with some plants that, with some like plant pots that got knocked over. And he's like, oh, I don't know what the hell is happening here. But later, Lily and Kieran show the younger kids like a demonstration on how to handle a lightsaber. So we see the two of them spar, and it's the first time that we see a lightsaber as well. And then Vivnia learns that although a lightsaber can take a life easily, it can also be used to protect life or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that the Jedi lessons. But dude, lightsabers, like the hilts of the lightsaber that Lily has, they look like samurai sword hilts.
Oh, they're so sick.
And they're fucking incredible. Like, I don't know why that's not a thing in normal Star Wars, you know?
Well, you'll see, Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But it looks really cool. Like, it feels like it fits this world very well.
It makes a lot of sense because it's got, like, that like, stopper.
Yeah.
So that if your hand slips, it's not going to be just grabbing a lightsaber.
Functionally, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a little protector.
Because if you're doing a lightsaber battle in the rain, you don't want your hand to slip.
Oh, man, that'd blow.
It slips up and you grab the lightsaber, that's it. You're done.
Mm-mm.
But, yeah, and she's got two of them as well, which I think is really cool.
That's always great.
How does that happen? How do you get two, you know?
I don't know.
Can you just pick?
Because, like, Ahsoka Tano had one at first, and I haven't, like, finished Clone Wars or anything, but then she eventually gets that, like, shorter one.
Yeah.
With, like, the bent hilt.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know what the rules are. Like, I read a couple issues of, like, the comic High Republic,
mm-hmm.
and the main character just has a double-sided lightsaber. I'm like, wait, and she's, what is she, a Padawan? Yeah, she's a Padawan.
And she's got a double-sided?
And she's got double-sided. I'm like, what the hell?
Damn. There must just be like a shed or whatever. And it's like, okay, you're a Padawan now. Pick your lightsaber.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I don't think it's like, you know, General Grievous just when he kills a Jedi, he takes him.
Yeah, well, that's what he does, but he's a bad guy.
Yeah, he's pretty bad.
I wonder who was the first person to like ask for two. And Jedi were like, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like you have to like almost prove yourself. Because that seems like it can get sloppy, you know?
Yeah.
Because two hands is real secure, like a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But having two, that's a lot of coordination.
I always think it would be really hard to do that move where, like, they're like, you know how a lot in Star Wars the lightsabers will, like, touch and then they'll be, like, pushing, like, towards, like, one of the people that, like, are holding the lightsaber?
Yeah.
And they have to just, like, hold it back with, like, one arm.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that would be really hard
to do. There's probably not a lot of standoffs when you have two.
Yeah, true.
Because if you got one, you just smack him with the other one.
Yeah, you just hit him in the head or in the toes maybe.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So Lily has two lightsabers and she's just kind of like sparring, doing this demonstration with Kieran. But I feel like the lightsaber sort of action themselves don't really land as well for me without like the pretty colors. There's just like something about seeing a lightsaber just white, I guess, or like gray and white. Like the glow is gray and the lightsaber itself is represented as white, which makes sense. But
right.
I feel like, at first, it's a little bit weird because I'm like, okay, that's what the lightsaber looks like.
And colorists in like the comics do a great job of making it like glow.
Dude, the glowy effect is so good.
Like this, like I don't know how they pull that off. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really cool and it works well. But what I do like about what happens in this book is there's like a page where Kieran is using his lightsaber and there's one shape that's like resembling the path of his lightsaber moving while there's like multiple Kierans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like showing him at like different points on one panel. And I think that looks really cool.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So I think like the manga art style does really well with really hyperbolizing or extrapolating or whatever. Like just making lightsabers cooler, but like in their own art style. So I think that the lightsaber battle sort of gets kind of, they make it up in that way, I think.
Sure. Yeah, like I was looking at this and it's definitely looks like someone, like an artist that only does manga and you're just told to do Star Wars shit and not like the other way around. Cause sure, you can like kind of make faces in the manga style and then everything else kind of is the same as comics,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think that'd work as well.
Yeah. You couldn't get someone to like mimic manga for Star Wars. You'd need to have a manga artist do Star Wars,
which they did, which worked out really well.
Yeah. And they put their own flavor on it, which is very refreshing.
Cause I feel like if you just put this in like a Japanese store, as long as it was like translated, like people wouldn't even notice
that
it was made in like America or whatever.
Yeah. So when they get back to the town, they notice that the farmer guy that brought some seeds is acting a little bit strange, and he was like unresponsive for a little bit. And then there are some plants and just random things that are missing from the settlement on Banshee. So Master Arkoff tasks Lily, her Padawan Kieran, and then the two kids to go investigate in the forest.
They're younglings, Nathan.
Younglings? Yeah. I guess, do they ever call them kids in Star Wars, or are they always just younglings?
They always say younglings, I'm pretty sure.
That's such a dumb word.
Wait, like, you remember in Padme, like, confronts Anakin on, like, Mustafar?
Mm-hmm.
Did she say, like, you were killing younglings? Or is it, I thought she said children.
Children?
I think she said children.
Yeah, but still no kids, huh?
She's like, killing younglings.
Younglings like wouldn't land as well, I don't think. That's just like a silly word.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, Lily, Kieran, and the younglings go to investigate just out in the forest to see if they can find anything suspicious. And they bring a droid named Didi with them as well. And I like how just it's just a rule in Star Wars sort of grammar or whatever that if they're going to type out a droid's name, they type out the phonetic, like, part of the droid, I guess.
Yeah.
So if the droid's name is just like the letter D, they spell it D-E-E-D-E-E.
Uh-huh.
Or like for R2-D2, when people in Star Wars comics call him R2, it's spelled like R-A-R and then like T-O-O.
Yeah, and like 3PO is like three, like spelled out three, and then P-I-O.
Yeah. I always think that that's 3PO. Like, it's like, that's like an interesting constant that I feel like Star Wars editors or whatever
you got to
look
this.
Out for. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
It is kind
to
of fun.
Think about. But like if they just put the droid number,
yeah,
or whatever, I'd be like, yeah, them.
I'm not going to read it as like, you know,
yeah.
I'm just going to read it as Didi. So but Didi looks like one of those droids in Episode 1 that were helping out with like the pod races. Do you remember them? They're like these like little guys and they look like they have a big hat on. But there's like a big circular face for them or a big circular, I don't know, part of their design.
It's not ringing any bells.
Okay. I just remember them from the Lego Star Wars game. Actually,
very specific.
Recently, I was playing, well, not like super recent, but a couple weeks ago, Parker had downloaded a really, really old Star Wars pod racing game on the Xbox because it was there and it was like $1.
That's dope.
And it was like just a super campy game. And if you have like half a brain, half of the game, you're in like first place and you don't see anybody behind you because the AI is just so bad and doesn't know how to drive. But
yeah,
it was pretty cool, like, because you can pick like the pod racer they want and you can upgrade like the engines or whatever and change how it looks. So it was kind of fun for like a really old game.
Yeah, that sounds sick.
Yeah. So anyway,
do you remember how fun pod racing was on Lego Star Wars?
Dude, that's probably the best representation of pod racing.
Yeah, you got to blow everything up and you got more tokens.
Yeah,
or
you got more tokens
or whatever.
Yeah, and you had to kill that one dude that was like the big bad guy in the pod racing scene.
Yeah.
Whatever his name was.
Anyway, good shit.
So they go to the forest and Lily and Kieran are talking while walking, like sort of about the kids and how they need to gain focus or perspective or something like that if they want to be Jedi. And then
what I kind of liked about Lily is that she doesn't really like younglings that much.
Yeah, she kind of hates them. She's like, these
yeah,
guys are...
she's like, yeah, just because they're like inexperienced and stuff like that. Not that that's their fault, but like with certain situations, she just didn't want them to be at risk or anything.
Yeah.
And so I don't like when it's like the main character is like, oh, like perfect.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like she's got like her flaws.
Lily's like, these kids are going to fucking get themselves killed if they're not careful.
Yeah, I know.
And I really like just the art of them like walking in the forests. Like there's a top down view of all of them and you could see like the shading of the actual leaves like hit their skin and sort of renders it that way.
Yeah.
And I think
cool.
It works very well. But mm-hmm. What's weird is that technique isn't consistent for the whole time that they're in this forest. So they kind of just like pick and choose when to do that technique. I think it's kind of interesting.
Maybe it's just that one panel where they're under some trees.
It could have been as well. But,
because I think that would have been kind of, I don't think that would really make sense if you're looking at them like head on, if there's just like shadows all over them.
Yeah,
because then they'd kind of look like camo.
Yeah.
In a way.
That's
so
fair.
I think that was the right decision.
Also, I feel like Lily doesn't look that much older than Kieran. Like Lily's a Jedi and Kieran's a Padawan, but I feel like their age difference is like,
yeah,
not
Kieran
that,
can
not,
be like
not
14 and we don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's mostly, like, the Jedi braid. They're like, oh, this is a child.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
he doesn't know shit.
This is a Padawan. He's got the little Padawan braid.
Yeah.
On. But, yeah, they don't look that old. I guess, like, when I think about Episode 1, I guess Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon don't look that much different in age from each other that much.
Dude, Qui-Gon's got like
he's got the beard, which makes him look older, but like
and I don't know, man. Ewan McGregor looked like very young, like 23 or something then.
Yeah, I guess it's true. Anyway.
Because so, I think he was 20 something and that came out.
Really?
And then their voices are just like super distinctive. Like Qui-Gon had like a
Liam Neeson's
voice hasn't changed since that movie.
Yeah,
and so it sounds
Liam Neeson just sounds wise.
Right.
So I think that's part of a big reason why he got that role.
100%.
So yeah, they're walking around the forest and then they find like a disturbed part of the forest where there's like a path of trees that were knocked down. And Dee Dee scans the area and sees something that's not native to Banshee. So they send the kids back to the temple to go get Master Alkoff while Lily and Kieran investigate what's going on. And it's like, I guess the path is leading back towards the settlement. But they find the refugee that brought the seeds on the ship, except now he's completely made of wood. Like standing in place, he was just like turned into wood suddenly.
Yeah, like a Medusa thing,
yeah,
except wood.
But wood. And so now they start running towards like a little fire that was happening at the settlement, and they find this huge ass monster with like thorny tendrils like coming out of him, and he's screaming about meat and he's like wrecking a bunch of shit.
Yeah, his head kind of looks like a pineapple, but like with like a dragon mouth coming out of it.
Yeah, that's a good rip.
And like
yeah.
His whole body is like a huge,
it's like if Groot became a symbiote but the tendrils were still made out of wood.
Yeah, yeah.
So like it's very monster, like it looks very dope and it's very anime. So, like, as soon as I saw this, I was like, fuck yeah, now we're into some...
I was like, here we go.
We're into some manga now.
Like here's the meat of the book. That's why it says meat right there.
And I feel like a lot of manga artists draw literally the most insane monster shit. Like...
anime's fucking ridiculous.
Incomparable to any other country, I feel like, when it comes to monsters. Like,
yeah,
the manga artists do it best.
Have you ever looked at, like, manga horror?
Yeah.
It's fucking, I look away. I'm like, I can't look at this.
I follow like a Twitter account that's like manga horror because there's like, they're really into like body horror and shit like that.
Oh, I know.
And
dude,
they're really
like
good
the
at
worst,
it.
That's like the worst kind.
It boggles Chainsaw my Man. Mind because like, how do they
think of that?
How do they, what do they reference, if anything at all? Do they just like go?
I think they just go.
It's insane to me. So that's what like this monster is like. Like nothing like this has ever looked like this in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But, like, it's super fucking cool to see this kind of monster.
Definitely. Yeah, like, in Chainsaw Man, like, some of the villains and shit, and they have, like, because they're all, like, devils or whatever of
yeah.
different things, just crazy. I'm like, who thinks of this?
Yeah.
And then they draw it, you know?
Yeah.
There's something wrong with them, but I don't know if anyone asks if they're okay, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if there's anybody around them to ask if they're okay, because they're just drawing monsters all the time and
yeah,
grinding.
Yeah, they pump out books weekly, so it's like, they don't have time.
Yeah.
To be okay.
And I think it's interesting that we see like the thoughts lettered without any sort of kind of containment,
yeah,
like a caption
thoughts.
Box or like a thought bubble. Because
yeah.
in traditional American comics, like if there's a word on the screen that's like not part of the environment, it's like in like a little box for us to know, I guess.
Yeah, like the narration would be in like the corner in like a box.
Yeah, but I almost feel like this makes more sense because thoughts are like, they're not structured, you know? Because
sometimes when it's like the narration, it could be like the character that's saying that, but not at that time,
yeah.
you know? And but this, it's like, you know, that's their thoughts immediately.
That's
like,
what they're
in
thinking in this panel, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, the kids alert Master Alkoff, and the kids immediately start helping, like, the civilians while Alkoff meets Lily, like, as she's sort of trying to stop this thing. And Lily doesn't really know if it's running on instinct or, like, trying to destroy stuff on purpose, but they figure a fight's probably unavoidable. But meanwhile, back at the settlement with the kids, there's a second monster attacking the people taking shelter. So we're just kind of in a shitty situation very quickly.
Right.
But I like that Lily immediately tries to like tame the monster, like using the force instead of just like chopping it up. Mm. Like it seems like the Jedi way to just approach that situation, kind of like, can we cool down like a little bit and maybe talk this out?
Right.
But then the Wookiee Jedi just comes in and immediately slices him. So I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I definitely think seems like the Jedi way is more present in this book.
Yeah.
As in like in the movies, they just start swinging.
They kill every animal they see, I feel like.
Yeah, I know.
Like in episode 2, when they were like in the little arena, there's like so many animals there and they just kill them.
Yeah, slice heads off.
Yeah, but in here, Lily's like, okay, let me try and contain this guy. Maybe he's just freaking out. But then Master Alkoff just starts slicing as soon as he sees something
yeah,
wrong.
Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
Look at that thing.
There's no way that thing's nice. Okay. Have you seen him? So the monster calls itself the Drangir, which is nice for us, I guess. He just announces what his name is or what their species is.
Yeah.
So Drengir,
yeah.
Drengir, yeah. And so that's nice for us, I guess. But Lily hears the screams coming from the people that are being attacked by the other Drengir. So Lily and Kieran leave Alkoff with the first Drengir while they go to fight the second one. They find out that when they slice up a Drengir, like tendril, it regenerates what was lost like really fast. It pulls off like a Hydra sort of situation. And so Lily has the kid move the civilians to a different part of the Jedi Temple while she distracts the Drengir. And Lily does this by switching off her lightsaber so that she can seem like an easy target and just dodges it a bunch to like lead it outside of the temple. So what's interesting here is that she does a, when she turns off her lightsaber and she's like dodging and stuff, she does like a Jedi dash. Do you remember the Jedi dash from like episode one that was like only used one time?
Where they just go real fast?
Yeah, they just like jump in one direction. They go real fast.
Yeah.
She does that here to avoid the monster, and I think that that's pretty cool.
Definitely.
To see a little bit more of a Jedi dash. Alkoff manages to also split the Drengir down the middle as well.
Yeah,
he's like, I've had enough of this shit. But I really love the movement in like Master Alkoff's fighting, because he has like a lot of hair, and that's very like prevalent when he's like jumping up in the air to do like a big slice down, like we see all of his hair move.
Yeah.
And like the movement feels like really just like there's a lot of energy there. I feel like I just love Wookiee Jedis. Like, we need more.
Oh, so sick. Yeah. Have you ever seen the bottom of a Wookiee's foot?
No.
Because you can in this panel.
What panel?
The one where he cuts him in half.
Oh yeah.
It's got a big ass foot.
Oh my god, he's got four toes.
Is it four?
Four or five.
I don't know if that's like fur or another toe.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you only see like his legs.
I figured they were just stumps. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, elephant
feet. I knew that they were feet, but I didn't think they were like stumps or anything.
Yeah.
But I just realized that like I'd never really seen that.
Yeah. And this page where he is like slicing it down the middle looks really cool. There's a lot of speed lines and everything like that.
Very good. And then like whenever they're cutting something, like the thing that they're cutting like separates like so much from the lightsaber itself. For some reason,
the thing that they're cutting separates so much.
Yeah, like, see here,
it's just like splits.
Yeah, and then they show kind of the bend of the saber when they're swinging it a lot, which is a cool effect as well.
I think that's always like a fun effect in any Star Wars comic, just seeing how the artist portrays the movement of a lightsaber. Because sometimes people will show like a cone or something to show that like a lightsaber is like swinging,
right?
But in here, they tend to go to just like a lightsaber being bent because it's like moving really fast. So
it reminds me of like the Family Guy special of Star Wars, where like the dude that's Obi-Wan is like Star Wars is sitting like erect.
Yeah,
it just like flops.
It just falls down.
He just like whips it at him, and the whole time.
And then he mentions Luke, and then just like whoop, and it like goes erect again.
I forgot about that.
That was the dumbest shit.
I need to rewatch those. They did like all the movies, I think, or like
I don't think so. I think they did like one or two.
No, they did like the original trilogy for sure, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But
so
funny
we find out if you split a Drengir down the middle, it just hydras into two Drengir. So now there are three total Drengir, and they're all in one spot. But Lily has a brain blast on something to try and stop them. So Lily and Kieran leave to go set that up. But what's funny about this is that they bring a Drengir. Alkoff realizes that when he splits one down the middle, there's two. So there's three there. And then Lily's like, hey, can you just like handle this real quick? I'm going to go try something. So he just like kind of,
can you distract them for a minute?
Yeah. She's like, you got this, right? I need to go set something up. So she just like leaves Alkoff to go do whatever and doesn't explain what she's doing.
Right.
So just kind of bails.
And he's just like, yep.
I guess so. I hope you know what you're doing.
So she's got to be like, if not older, but like experienced to get that kind of trust from Alkoff. Like,
yeah.
Just
for him to be like,
in that situation.
Like, all right, I guess, you know.
Like, yeah, man, I'll just keep being a badass.
So Lily goes by like a lake with some barrels that have some liquid in them. And when the Drengir make their way to her, she uses the force to cover the Drengir with that liquid so that Kieran can throw a torch on them.
She does like a whole waterbending move.
Yeah. And have we ever seen that? Like Jedi using the force to like basically waterbend?
I feel like maybe.
I feel like someone somewhere has done that. I don't think so in like a movie.
Do they do that in like, well, like, in The Mandalorian, Baby Yoda can, like, stop fire, you know?
He can.
And so
he almost makes, like, a shield, though. But she's, like, taking water in like clumps and just like moving it. So unless she could, like, I don't really know how that works.
I mean,
I'm not thinking about it too hard.
It's basically telekinesis.
Yeah.
And they even say that in the book. They're like, oh, there's practice on your telekinesis.
Okay.
And so like that is what it is. So it's just the same thing, except she's picking up water.
Okay. Well, she does a great job.
Yeah, it looks real cool.
And so they throw whatever liquid. I just assume it's gasoline. I just assume that gasoline is a thing in Star Wars.
Space gas.
Space gas. So she throws the space gasoline on the Drengir, and then Kieran just tosses a torch on them, and they start to burn. But then all the Jedi have to come together and use the Force together to sort of contain the fire.
Yeah.
It's like the end of the first Fantastic Four movie.
That's exactly what it is, Nathan. That's so smart.
That's immediately what I thought of.
It's a great analogy. I was just thinking like, oh yeah, I think that it's just like containing it, and they're also making it worse for them.
Yeah, they're like compressing the fire on them so that it really burns them, but it works. So they did a good job. And so after the monsters, she feels like a little bit of a disturbance in the Force after this event on a place called Valo. I don't know what that is.
I think that's another planet.
I assume so.
Maybe not the one in the beginning.
Is that the main planet on like the normal High Republic series?
I don't know.
It seems like that's a way to like connect these books somehow.
So there's Drengir in the other book.
Oh, okay.
So that is the only connection that I found so far.
Do they look like that?
It's a different artist, but it's like the same concept.
Okay.
In the one in the comic, they're a little bit thicker, but
okay.
Other than that, and they kind of like live in the ground, and they get cut. The main characters get caught up because they go in like a cave. So
okay, so they live. They're not like Sarlacc, where they live in the ground. They just like live in caves underground.
I think they can really just. It's probably like a swamp thing kind of situation.
Okay,
like you know, lives within plants and stuff like
that. Just go anywhere,
right?
So yeah, she feels a disturbance in the Force on Valo, but her priorities are on Banshee. So a week later, the Jedi Master Stellan from like Lily's past shows up and is like, hey, that was some pretty good shit with the Drengir that you did. So good job there, murdering those people, or those Drengir. and then Stellan says that the Nihil used them before to fight Jedi on Valo. And Stellan wants to take the fight to Nihil, so he's taking Master Alkoff to help him in his fight, while Lily is supposed to stay and protect Banshee. But she's like a little afraid that she's not enough to protect the people. But Master Alkoff convinces her otherwise with like a little Wookiee pep talk or whatever. Right. So the Nihil is like the Empire of the High Republic Age. Is that somewhat correct in saying? They're just like a bad...
It's just kind of like a bad group.
A bad guy group?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I don't think they're...
Maybe not like as big as
they're not as
the
like
Empire.
Organized, you know, because there is a Nihil in the comic that I was reading, and it's like an animal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like one of them. So I don't know if there's like a lot of them or if there's smarter ones and stuff like that.
Okay, cool.
So anyway.
So there's like a little bit of foreshadowing as well. There's like a guy with a scary looking mask. And the mask is like next to that container that the farmer brought with him.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's just like a random page with that. And so I'm like, okay. And that mask's pretty cool. So
pretty cool mask.
Then Lily talks to the people about what's happening and... about like Alkoff leaving and stuff, and the people seem a little bit concerned, but then they leave. And then Master Stellan gives like a little pep talk about learning the Jedi way or whatever before leaving with Alkoff, like for good. And then Lily goes to train the kids, Vivnia and Nima, some more. So just like a lot of kind of wrapping up stuff. But what I think is funny is that Stellan says to Lily, "You must be a bridge between the Jedi and the people." And then she's like, "I understand." But I'm like, "Really?" Because I don't really have a clue what that means there, how she's supposed to be a bridge between Jedi and people.
I think that just means like you have to explain to people like why Jedi are helpful and what they're able to do.
Yeah.
And to kind of help them feel protected.
Okay, that makes sense.
So she's kind of like a salesman for the Jedi.
Yeah, she's like, these are some good guys, okay? You got to trust them.
We got some real big lightsabers.
Best in the biz. You'll never find a better one anywhere else.
What do I got? One? Count them, two lightsabers.
That means I'm twice the Jedi.
It means okay. I'm two Jedis, basically.
Jedis with two lightsabers are always cooler, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, the one is just, like, yeah.
You
okay,
see
a
lot of those
Jedi.
Moves. You know?
Unless, like, you can really fuck it up with that, like, one.
If you have, like, a different fighting style, you know?
Well,
I feel like
that's
when it's cool.
Remember that game, like, The Force Unleashed?
Yeah.
Where that dude, he held it, like, backwards?
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool.
If you got some style, or if you're, like, Dooku and you, like, do a spinny move or whatever... That's pretty cool if you got one lightsaber.
Yeah, but if you're just like a normal and you hold it with two hands like a chump.
Yeah.
Not cool.
What is it? A baseball?
Yeah.
Baseball bat?
Double-sided, double lightsabers, all cool.
Very cool.
Did you ever see the fucking Inquisitor lightsabers?
Yeah, they have like the little circles and they can spin in circles.
Yeah, dude. That shit's crazy too.
They have that in Jedi Fallen Order.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It was a bitch.
Good game.
Good game. Love that game. Did you ever finish that game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you saw like what happened at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, the Darth Vader stuff, spoilers.
A lot of spoilers. Vader's in the game. Oh.
Yeah. Dude, that game was so good. Especially when you see Darth Vader and you can't do shit, so you just have to run.
I would almost like delete my game just to redo it again. Just because.
Just do it on a harder difficulty.
I don't know, dude.
It's
I got
that
I,
way.
No, dude, because like the fucking what are the people that were on like the Darth Maul planet?
The
Draki or something like that? Or
oh man, what are they called? I gotta look it up.
Okay, let me know what planet they're on too.
Dathomir. That's such a cool name.
That's a great fucking name for a planet. Are you kidding me? For it just to be such a shithole, you know?
Dathomir.
Wait,
yeah.
What was the?
What are they called?
Yeah, what are the people called?
I don't know. Dathomirian.
No,
they called Dathomirians.
That's not right, but whatever.
Wait, no, that's what... Yeah, Darth Maul was a Force-sensitive male Dathomirian Zabrak Dark Lord.
I thought they were called something else, but I could be wrong. But yeah, like, the whole Dathomir, like, in general, was a huge pain in the dick, just on, like, normal.
On that game, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, because, like, they're actually, like, pretty good, which I liked, because I didn't just want to just, like, mow through people as I'm running, you know?
Dude, they were, like, scary. Like, I would have to run away constantly.
Like, I would try to avoid them at all costs, you know? Like, if I can get around where they are, I will. So...
Yeah. Good game, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't want... I would just get, like, way too pissed off at it.
I want more Jedis wear ponchos, like that one dude did.
Yeah, Cal Kestis.
Yeah, Cal Kestis.
Yeah, ponchos are cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's, like, his look, you know?
Yeah, true. He's like, I'm gonna wear a poncho. But, yeah, anyway, to end the book, Lily talks with the doctor who was doing an autopsy on the people that turned to wood from the Drengir, and he discovered that the bodies had, like, an unusual spore that was not native to Banshee, and so he thinks that they were introduced recently. And then they pieced together that the farmer refugee that was bringing, like, that container of seeds was being used to transport the Drengir to Banshee. And then we cut to somebody else that was kind of like a character, but kind of not. We see him from the settlement calling who I'm assuming is like the Nihil. So we find out that he's like a double crosser.
Right.
So there's a Nihil in Banshee. And then that's how the book ends. So there's another volume of this coming out. I don't know if it's out already. Cause this is like a brand new,
this came out like this month.
Yeah.
So like 2 weeks ago or something. So I imagine this will probably come out in a couple months if there's another one. But yeah, there is going to be a second volume, which is cool.
Yeah, pretty good. And we'll go into some back matter matters.
Back matter matters.
So we have I guess that like, it's kind of back matter, but kind of not. But it's just like a bonus chapter called the Banshians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a full like 20 pages or something that it's not really like part of the main story, but it's all the same characters. But it's basically Lily and the crew find a species of like... They look like Jawa penguins.
Oh, I thought they were like little chickens.
They look like chickens or penguins or something that are just wearing Jawa like cloaks.
These look like little Pokemon.
Yeah, they really do. They're very cute.
But they have like bows and torches and shit, and like one's holding a big ass knife.
That's why they remind me of Jawas, because they just like they take stuff.
Yeah, because like they're native to the planet, and they were just taking stuff that was like they found
from the settlement
because they don't know the concept of like ownership.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, this is on our planet. We found it. So this is ours now.
Like, oh, look at this fork.
Yeah. You know? And I guess they're going to figure out a way to communicate with them.
Yeah.
And have like a section where all the shareable things are.
Yeah. There's some interesting ideas because Lily like uses Jedi energy or Jedi mind tricks or whatever to be like, we're not here to hurt you. No, like, okay, cool.
She uses the Force to get rid of bad vibes.
But yeah, that's exactly what she does. The Jawa penguins are like, I'm getting bad vibes from them. And then Lily's like, she's like a Jedi thing. And then like, okay, no bad vibes here.
Yeah.
And then Kieran does some like Pictionary shit to be like, if you're going to take stuff, take it from like this part. And they're like, all right.
Yeah.
And so they basically just like find a way to compromise with them to live in like harmony rather than just like, I don't know, letting them continue to take stuff or like they give them a route to take things if they want to take them.
What was funny is, like, in this cave, there were, like, booby traps.
Yeah.
And it shot out these little, like, sticks that didn't hurt anybody. And then it had, like, a quicksand thing that I think it was Kieran.
Just, it went, like, 3 feet.
Yeah, it just went to his waist. Like, he was fine. Like, he could get out.
I like that idea because the...
It would have drowned them if they got caught in it. But everyone else is, like, nothing.
Yeah. While, like, the Ewoks... have like this deadly trap that'll kill like most like stormtroopers and shit. Right. But yeah, it's really cute thinking that like whoever the engineer was for those traps was like, oh yeah, this is the deadliest shit of all time.
No one's getting in here, boys.
And it just shoots toothpicks at people. So yeah, it's like a cute little story that I enjoyed very much. I like just that species in general and I like their whole vibe.
Yeah, they're funny.
And I like the way that Lily approaches it. So it was very, very cool little story.
Definitely.
So what would you rate this book, Daniel?
You know, I'd grade it like a grande hot caramel macchiato.
Okay.
You know, can really hit the spot sometimes. Not something I get all the time. Not nearly my favorite thing, but it's nice.
I thought of a different rating system for this book specifically. Have you ever been to Teharu?
Oh, fuck. Yeah,
It's like a conveyor belt sushi place.
Yeah.
Very good. I went there just a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I fuck with this so much. I like it a lot.
It's good for volume, for sure. But,
I'm going to rate this book based off the plate that you get, because the different plates that you get are like values. Different values. Yeah.
Okay, what's the cheapest one color?
The cheapest one is like yellow.
Okay.
And there's blue, green, and like red.
And red's the most expensive?
Red's the most expensive. So okay. I'd give this one like a blue.
Okay.
That's like a solid like dragon roll, you know?
Oh, wow. I love dragon rolls.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of those.
But only at Teharu.
Well, only at Teharu, yeah. At Teharu, they got some fucking smacking sushi rolls.
I like how they put like just like water bottles and shit on like the conveyor belt. Yeah, they do. Like, you want some water?
Dude, I saw like chocolate milk going and I'm like, I'm not trying to have chocolate milk with my dragon roll.
They also have like desserts in there. I'm like, that's going to melt.
Yeah.
But... and like cakes and stuff,
but they're good about like taking ones that have been on the belt for like a while.
Okay,
they're organized with that, you know, because I heard stories where like somebody went and there wasn't a lot of people there and they were asking like the chefs, you could like see them in the middle, they were like, how long has this stuff been sitting here? And they're like, we're just gonna remake some stuff for you, you know.
Oh, okay.
So they're pretty good about that. But yeah, I rate this like a blue plate dragon roll and I'll have like six of them, you know.
What I hate about that place is like you look at it and I'm like, all right, what's that? And you look down on your menu that shows like all of them.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, fuck, I want that one. Yeah. You have to like reach for it.
Get it. And I was like sitting, last time I was there, I was sitting at like a table like this. So we didn't all have access to the belt.
So you had to be like,
so we had to delegate the two people closest to the belt to be like, grab that.
Yeah. You
had to be like, Rachel, get it. You know? So yeah, I like those places. But yeah.
Strategic.
This is a solid blue plate.
Okay. That's a good, that's funny. Place.
Yeah. But yeah, pretty good book. Check it out if you're trying to read Star Wars manga, I guess.
Yeah, if as far as like just pulling that off, they did really good at
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think so. Like,
I think was all I was looking for.
This worked. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, really what I wanted, is for it to just like work out very well. And it was a very quick read, actually, too.
Oh, yeah. Manga, you just fly through it.
I read like 120 pages of it. And like of the actual story, there's only like 127. I like stopped at page 120.
Uh-huh.
And I was like... picking it up later, and I read 7 pages and I was like, oh shit, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
But I read like 120 pages in like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Maybe even less.
It's like definitely a one sitting kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why like manga like is popular, because it doesn't feel long and you can just read one of the, because they all come in those little volumes and you just read them in like a sitting.
Yeah, I think part of the, I guess, barrier of entry for people to just pick up a comic book in general is just that they don't want to read.
Sure. It doesn't feel like reading, though.
This doesn't feel like reading, which I think is part of the reason why a lot of manga is very popular.
Yeah.
It's very swift. And you could speed through it if you want. Or, like, I was even taking my time and, like, looking at sort of the art style because I was interested in how they do things differently. And I still, like, blew through the book pretty quickly.
Yeah, the pages are, like, you can see just from this physical one. Like, it's a smaller book.
This is
bigger than, like, normal manga, but it's a smaller book and there's a lot less panels.
Yeah.
And then... normally not a lot of room for dense dialogue, so...
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty good. So we'll go into our final segment, the pull list, : shove it in your box.
The pull list, what did you shove in your box?
Dude, what you got this week, Nathan?
I got a couple things. It was actually kind of a bigger week for me.
Okay.
But I got two things from DC. I got Superwoman Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. I hate those two adjectives.
Or, yeah, and they're right next to each other.
Yeah, they are. I got Batman Detective number 5 of 6. So that's almost done.
Okay.
The Tom Taylor, Andy Kubert one.
Yeah, I bought the first one of that. Never read it.
I'm behind like 2, but it's only like 6 issues. So I've been getting them and I'll read them.
Okay.
The Last Ronin number 4 came out.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that. I think that's the last one.
I think there's 5, but I could be wrong.
The cover made it look like...
That was the end?
Maybe not. Maybe it was just like a, oh no.
Are you even caught up on that?
No, I'm okay. Not. I only read issue 1 so far, but I have all of them.
The first issue is definitely like the best one, but...
I'm still like interested in reading them all, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's like important.
Yeah, that's what it feels like it.
Yeah.
And then I picked up Chew number 8 as well.
Oh, yes.
And I'm going to pick up Moon Knight. But they didn't have it at the shop when I went there. I went a little bit later, so it was already sold out. But Moon Knight number 3 came out.
You're still picking that up?
Yep. I read number 2. Very good. It's a very different Moon Knight series, but all of the Moon Knight series are so different from each other, which is part of the reason why I love Moon Knight. So, but yeah, those are the things I picked up.
Sure, for sure.
What about you?
I think I read it as like 5 somewhere, but I can't remember. Anyway.
It might be 5. I would believe that, you know.
So, yeah, I haven't gone, but I will get Supergirl 4, Last Ronin 4. The last issue for Black Hammer Visions, which is number 8.
Okay.
I don't know who writes on that one, but did Jonah 6 come out today?
Jonah?
Jonah and the Impossible Monsters.
Ooh, I don't think so. I think the trade's coming out and then the next issue.
I thought that came out already, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I just saw somewhere that it was coming out this week. Maybe it was Chris Samney who posted about it.
It could be. He's the one that does that book, so that would make sense.
Chew 8's on the list, and then... I'm still picking up Jupiter's Legacy Requiem.
Oh, okay.
It'll be number 4.
I've not touched that at all.
Like, I need to read the rest of it, and then I'll get to this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I still, like, want it.
Yeah.
Know?
There's probably some interesting stuff going down in there. Like, I think that comic universe is very strong.
Yeah.
I just didn't really give a shit about the show.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And then, did you get the chance to read anything?
Yeah, I did. I read the second issue of Blue and Gold.
Okay.
The Dan Jurgens, Ryan Sook book.
Is it Nacho series?
Not so far.
Okay.
I could see that I could still get there, but it's only 8 issues.
Oh.
So it's like a mini series. But for the most part, it's still very enjoyable. Like,
nice.
It's Dan Jurgens is so good at writing those characters, and he created Booster Gold, so it makes sense.
Yeah, he probably gets it better than anybody.
Yeah, but like, he's good at putting them in situations that like you don't really see A-list superheroes in, and they're like,
nice.
And then it's also like a commentary on how big like social media would be for a superhero that's trying to join the Justice League. You know?
Yeah.
So he's just like constantly like putting himself in bad situations so he can live stream it. And then like there's Ted Kord, who's like getting a lot of heat from Kord Industries. And like in this issue, the board like removed him.
Oh.
And but like as that happened, Booster Gold's like, yeah, we're getting funding from Kord Industries on this thing. But like a couple minutes before, Kord was taken off of the business. So there's like a lot of things on there that he's playing with a lot of fun ideas.
Okay.
So I'm enjoying it so far. And Ryan Sook is a delight, I feel like. Just when I think of his work, I'm just like, this is just delightful.
Nice.
So I'm really enjoying that. And then I committed myself to catching up on Green Lantern because I fell off of it at issue 2 because Killala chewed up that comic for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And so I found issue 2 just on the stand somewhere. So I picked it up. And it's out to number 6 now. So I read number 2 of the book. And there's a lot of ideas going on there. But I think they were building up a lot of ideas. And at the end of the second issue, the power battery blew up. And so like a lot of those ideas that they were just building on just kind of like probably went away. Because I don't really know what's happening beyond this. So it was very interesting.
Okay.
But it's also cool to see all the Green Lanterns that are kind of like... not typically in like a Green Lantern book to be in there, because we get the one from Far Sector.
Oh, cool.
And then you get Teen Lantern as well. And they're like, what the fuck? Why do you have a gauntlet? You know, so they're like,
right.
What's going on here? But then you see also Simon Baz, Jessica Cruz, like, and all the rest of them. So, but yeah, it's a good book.
It's good that they're just not like forgetting people.
Yeah. They're like including the ones that were like, this might be an interesting Green Lantern character. They're like, they're all there. So I like it a lot.
Right.
And cool. That's all I read this week.
For sure. Yeah, like I was saying, I read 4 issues of High Republic mm-hmm. Star Wars The High Republic, like the normal comic series. That's pretty good. I like it so far. I wish it would like kind of get moving a little bit faster.
There's a lot of talking.
Not that much. I guess going from like reading our book this week to that, it kind of seems that way. But yeah, it's like it doesn't seem like there's been like a bad guy established.
Okay.
Because they were just fighting like the Drengir. Mm-hmm. And that was like an issue and that was a problem for like a couple issues.
Yeah.
And so, and then it makes it less exciting because I just read about those things, you know?
Yeah, I guess
I'm
so.
Like, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
this is a problem.
There's these big plant monsters, whatever. Get over it.
Yeah. But it kind of shows what happens when they like get those people. Like they start to become like brainwashed kind of thing.
They don't just turn into wood?
No. I guess they have to be there for a minute or something. I don't know. But the Padawan's like master is like the same species as like Bosk.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which is cool. And he doesn't have an arm, but apparently it'll grow back.
Oh,
so
good.
So it's
for
just kind of interesting to see this dude with no arm and a lightsaber.
And he's still a Jedi.
Yeah.
He's not any less of a man, Daniel. He's still a Jedi.
True, true. it's always funny to see like these species in different roles, you know? Because I'm like, oh, that's a bounty hunter. At least
one of those guys is a bounty hunter, yeah.
But yeah, but there's no reason why one can be a Jedi.
Or seeing Alcoff, like a Wookiee as like a Jedi master.
Right,
and you're
exactly.
Like, this guy's cool. Like, why aren't there more of these guys?
Definitely.
That's cool.
And then I read 4 issues of Jonah and the Impossible Monsters.
Great book.
Great
right?
book.
Oh, it's
oh
so
my God.
Good. It's so fun. It feels like American anime, too.
Yeah, definitely. That flows. The flow is perfect for my attention span.
It is just, yeah, the flow is really incredible. And the creatures and stuff that he comes up with are just unbelievable.
The Matt Wilson colors, beautiful.
I don't think he colors it.
I think so.
I think it's Rachel Wilson or something.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think it might be like his wife or something.
Oh, never
I
mind.
I think there's another Wilson.
It kind of felt like Matt Wilson, though, like the way I was looking at it.
Maybe it is Matt Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's why you're so excited about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know what I'm talking about. He worked... Oh, it was Chris Somney worked with his wife at some point or another on it, yeah.
Because I think she's helping write it, and maybe she does the art, too, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, so good. I'm glad that you finally read it, because it's like...
You told me it was kind of a quick read, so I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And
yeah.
I got into that.
And it's just fun in general. I'm like, I don't really know what's happening, but like, I'm along for the ride with like Jonah's sister, who's like trying to find her sister and stuff like that. So it's very fun.
How far are you on it? Do you remember?
I think I'm 4 as well.
Yeah, dude. Like when she just like can lay out these monsters.
Yeah.
Everyone's taking like all their energy to do it. And she's like, fuck this thing.
She's just like jumping on him.
And they're
running.
All like, what the fuck? I don't think people freaked out enough about how sick that was.
She just like punched out that scorpion looking one or whatever. Or she's like running on the dinosaur looking one. She just jumps on it and runs like.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
I like how it's just like basically a one punch man.
Yeah, it feels like that.
It isn't like, I don't know if it kills him, but definitely knocked it out.
Yeah.
So that's a very fun thing. And then they're just looking for their dad.
He did that over the time that the pandemic stopped comics, basically.
Yeah.
Which is why that was coming out in conjunction with, like, Firepower.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, pretty cool. I like to see 2 Chris Somney books, you know, coming out at the same time.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Especially if he's, like, writing it. Yeah. You know? But it definitely feels like something that's written by an artist, you know?
Definitely.
It's definitely...
He leaves himself the room to just, like, stretch his legs or whatever. Like, he goes crazy in certain scenes because he's able to,
mm-hmm.
which is good.
Yeah, good shit. And then I watched a couple Vision episodes.
Vision?
Visions.
Visions,
sorry.
Okay.
Star Wars Visions.
Yeah, how was that so far?
It's good. I like it a lot. The first episode's kick-ass. So
really? Okay.
That's where, like, the umbrella lightsabers come in.
Okay, cool. Do they fly with them?
No, maybe momentarily.
I'm not a fan of people flying because their lightsabers spin real fast.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't think that's a cool looking thing.
But yeah, they all do a really good job of being really true to like the anime art style, which is kind of what I think is most important.
Yeah.
There's some episodes I like way more than others. And then some I'm just like, okay.
How long are they roughly? Are they about
they're all
the
like,
same?
They're all about like 15 minutes.
Oh, cool.
Okay. I think the longest one's like 22 minutes. So sweet. I could really fly through them. You remember I told you about like the old guy that was in it? Like I saw it in the trailer. I'm like, what's this guy about?
Yeah.
I watched that episode and it was like a little bit of a letdown. I thought it'd be like a little bit more, I don't know, bigger scene or something like that. He was still really cool, mm-hmm. but that was kind of like a bummer.
So each episode is a different art style from the previous one?
Yeah, different studio. It's all anthology and then self-contained stories. So
cool.
It's kick-ass. I don't know. Would you be able to watch that? Watch it all before like next week?
I'd probably be able to watch a good chunk of them, yeah.
Because I guess you can watch them all because there's like 9 episodes. And if they're like 15 minutes, that's like maybe 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I think it's possible. We could talk about it next week.
That's cool. I was watching like a YouTube series.
Okay.
There's a ton of good stuff on YouTube. We should talk about YouTube more. But
yeah, definitely.
I was watching the series from IGN that they put out.
Uh-huh.
And it was developers reacting to speedruns of the games that they worked on.
Oh, no.
And I've been on like a real speedrun sort of kick lately because speedrunning is just insane how much time and like effort people put into speedrunning a game. Like,
it's so just like they're sprinting the whole time and doing it as fast as possible.
Yeah. So they're just like, they've found out ways to get to point A to point B being the end of the game as quick as possible, whether that's clipping through walls or like finding exploits in the game and things like that. And so watching speedruns while listening to the developers talk about why that's broken, or like they're just finding out that their game is broken in like this particular way as they're watching the speedrun. Mm. So I watched a few of them, and it's funny because there's some speedruns where they just play the game fast and they're very good at it.
Yeah.
Like there's Hitman 3, like the Hitman series. Do you remember that game? The newest one, there's a level where the guy walks in, he shoots the people that he needs to shoot, and then he walks out, and he completes the level in 6 seconds. And then you hear the developer just like, what did that take us like a year to make? And it was like the saddest thing. And then there's another developer who's like, well, at least he used the guns that I made, like kind of deal. So I was like, oh, man, that's so funny to hear that from their perspective.
Yeah, I know.
And then there are some on like I watched Doom Eternal, so the newest Doom game. Mm-hmm. And he found like this exploit where if he reloads or something and then takes out like the weapon wheel, it like he can bind a certain button to a scroll wheel and like spam that button, and it builds up momentum and it just shoots him like across. And so like the developers are just talking about that and like why that works and things like that. But it's also interesting seeing like how specific like the speedrunners get with it,
right?
But yeah, it's a very good series. Huh. I've only been watching like the short ones because there are some speedruns that are like 2 hours long or whatever,
right?
But yeah,
it sounds interesting.
I've been liking a lot of speedruns. There's also a channel called Games Done Quick, and that's like all they do. They just broadcast like speedrunners.
That sounds insane, because then you like you have to like play it first, like normally, and then see how to get through it as quick as possible.
Yeah, and like some developers are kind of bitter about it because they're like, oh, you're not playing the game like you're supposed to, or like you're skipping this part. But like I think
they probably did first.
They have to, speedrunners have to appreciate a game in a much different way than like the normal consumer. Like they have to know every single like corner, like nook and cranny and all that. Like and one of the developers was like a really, for a different game, it was just like a simple like platformer game, and the guy got through it in like a minute and a half or something. But he was saying like, you know, speedrunners are cool because, you know, I think of it like somebody going to a museum and looking at a sculpture. Like a normal person would look at and appreciate the sculpture, but for like a speedrunner, they really examine the sculpture and know every single detail of it, and then they break it over their knee, you know. Mm-hmm. So that in a way they appreciate the game like a lot more than typical people just enjoying the game normally.
Right.
So it's a very interesting culture. But in the channel Games Done Quick, like I saw a dude go through and speedrun Super Mario 64, where you're like jumping through paintings and all that and collecting stars.
Uh-huh.
He did that whole game blindfolded.
Oh, shit. That's nuts.
It was the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another really good one from Games Done Quick is Super Monkey Ball.
Oh, yeah, dude. That holy shit,
That shit is probably the coolest speedrun I'll ever see.
What platform was that on?
GameCube.
How did we play it? We had that, didn't we?
I think we played it on GameCube or something like that.
We didn't have a GameCube, though.
Some sort of Nintendo sort of thing. Oh,
maybe like the DS or something?
It was some sort of console, but yeah, I recognize like some of the levels.
Yeah.
And they know it at a ways to where like they pause the game a lot to see where the timer freezes, and they get it down to like a particular millisecond, and then they'll just like turn the map and like smack the monkey ball, and then it like flies across the map and then like hits a different corner and boosts them forward and then gets it to the end of the level.
Yeah.
And it's really impressive looking. Huh. So yeah, it's very cool. And that one's not that long either.
For some reason on TikTok, I'm on like the TikTok where it's like all these like crazy jumps that people can do in like Skate 3.
Yeah.
Where like,
I've seen those too.
It's just like these insane gaps.
Yeah.
That probably took like a million takes to do.
Yeah.
And then I just happened to be on that TikTok where they show up a lot. I'm like, wow, that was impressive. And I keep liking them.
I'm like, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Where they do like a backflip and then like they lay down on the board and they go through like a statue.
Yeah.
And
dude, there are people that
I'm like, why?
There are people that love doing just random shit in games.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the speedruns was a game called Shrek Extra Large. And that's a really funny one too, because he's talking about his strats and there's like, it was only like a 20 minute speedrun. So I'm like, I'm absolutely watching this.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, there's a mechanic where you fart and it boosts you forward. So you have to do this thing called a jump fart and you can skip a couple parts. And he's like very serious about it. And then he's,
I think it could never be serious about
it. It was so
seriously talking about a jump fart.
It's so funny, dude. And he's like, okay, you got to kick these sheep in a particular direction or whatever. And it was really fun. So I've been getting into speedrunning lately.
I think I'd only really want to watch a speedrun if it's like a game that I've played and finished before and kind of want the nostalgia without actually like buying it again.
Watch the Monkey Ball one.
Like the Monkey Ball one. If there's like a Sly Cooper one.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Or like a fucking...
I kind of want to watch like a Jack and Dexter one.
Yeah, dude. Cool. You remember how many Jack and Dexters we had? Do you remember Jack 3?
Yeah.
Where they had like the cars and shit? Or no. That was Jack X, I think.
Yeah, one of those. But like, we played all those games, and so people are like to this day speedrunning those games.
Yeah,
and like finding ways to like skip certain parts or just do it a little bit faster at a time. So.
Yeah. Do you remember Jack 3? He like got like that like demon fuel or whatever, and he turned white. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I do.
That shit was freaky. It was cool, though.
I would play through that game again. But yeah, I might see if there's a Sly Cooper one. That's a good idea.
The games we play, we played a lot.
Yeah.
But anyway,
they got a lot of those. So very, very interesting, just sort of part of gaming. I've just like been really.
I didn't really know that was like a community.
Yeah. Speedrunning. Very.
It sounds like it takes a lot of time. It can be stressful.
It's and they like it's fun to see people do it in different ways. Because some people just do it very fast, like in the Monkey Ball ones. And then some people just glitch and you're like, this is insane.
I feel like I kind of speedrun through Arkham Knight. Because I only did like the main story like missions, so I can like get to the end because I just wanted the story. I didn't care about like the Riddler shit or anything like that.
There's an Arkham City speedrun that was like 15 minutes.
That's fucking nuts. But it's like believable too.
Yeah, but he like was able to skip obviously most of it, and he like clips through a wall, and then he's able to like hit a trigger point sort of like under the map while he's gliding. That takes him to basically. Almost like the last stage.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be
and then he has
able
to do
find
like the
glitches
last...
in the game.
Dude. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah.
But,
so, yeah, very interesting.
For sure.
Other than that, I just watched the next episode of Why the Last Man and then the What Ifs. So.
Okay, perfect. We'll talk about Why the Last Man when it's done because
yeah.
This episode wasn't that... There's not like a ton in each episode.
Yeah.
So, I think we can kind of talk about it as a whole at the end.
Yeah, it's still good. It's still fun. This episode wasn't like... Yeah, there wasn't that much going on, but yeah. So, What Ifs...
What Ifs? So you watched the What If Killmonger Saved Tony Stark?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, it's kind of what I expected and then kind of went a little bit farther than my expectations. And then it ended on like another like pretty big cliffhanger, honestly.
Yeah, and I was like, okay.
So like because he was saved and never captured, like Iron Man never became a thing. Mm-hmm. So he's just Tony Stark.
Which makes sense, and that's interesting to see. But we kind of just see the same Killmonger story. In a way.
Yeah, just like a different...
It just happened differently, and then T'Challa's dead.
And he's more successful.
Correct, yeah. So, like, I really like Killmonger. I think he's one of the best villains in the MCU, but I wish we saw a little bit more about him, I guess.
Well, I think we saw, everything that we'd probably need to see about him in Black Panther. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. But, like, he kind of goes through a lot of similar beats where he's a Navy SEAL... And then he, like, kills Claw to sort of gain the respect of Wakandans. And he takes over and he ends up being king or whatever. He becomes Black Panther. Or he drinks the Black Panther juice.
It was cool because they had to make, like, those Gundam suits.
That was kind of cool,
And then they had him go against Wakanda. But then he's like, oh, I can save you from these suits or whatever. And, like, kind of double cross it. And put it as, like, his advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was, like, really well written.
I felt like Tony Stark was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Just like the writing, I think, for like these last two episodes has been probably not what I want because they don't have a lot of time, but they squeeze in as many jokes as possible and they just like don't work that well.
I don't think I've like laughed at this show.
Yeah.
Except for maybe like something ridiculous that was on it, like, oh my god, it's Thanos, you know, kind of.
Yeah, thing. Exactly. So yeah, for that Killmonger one, it's probably like, yeah, probably like I like that one about as much as like the Captain Carter one, probably.
Probably. I think I maybe like this one a bit more because it was like more away from like his normal storyline.
Yeah. So yeah, it makes sense. There's some good action there too as well, though. Like once they got into the action for both of these episodes is really good. But the next one was, what if Thor was a only child?
Yeah, I didn't expect that to be like the title. And I'm like, that doesn't seem that crazy. You know
what I mean? And he basically just turns into a frat boy and he just like wants to party.
Yeah.
But so I guess the idea is like Odin's going into Odin's sleep and then Frigga is going to have a girl's night or whatever. Right. Girl's week where she just like tastes wine and does girl things, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Thor's like, yeah, I'll handle Asgard. And then he just goes to Earth or Midgard and starts partying a bunch. But I guess Heimdall doesn't look at Midgard, even though he sees all. So I'm not sure what that was all about. But
just like what they needed like, to get away with the story.
Pretty immediately, I was like, what is going on here? Like, I don't understand what was happening because, like, I get if, like, the Asgardians are partying, but then it was just, like, every single fucking alien in the Marvel Universe is just partying.
Yeah, like, the Skrulls are there. Like, yeah, Howard the Duck is
Drax
there.
Drax and Nebula were there partying. And I'm like, what is...
Like, the Grandmaster is there.
Yeah, Grandmaster. I'm like, you don't even know who this guy is yet.
Yeah, no.
So it was just, like, it was kind of strange. But I guess it was cool seeing a what if like this that's kind of just, like, a little bit sillier. You know?
Yeah, definitely. But I didn't really see like what the issue was.
I didn't either.
Like, and then like S.H.I.E.L.D. just had like butt in because he's like an alien technically.
Yeah, Maria Hill's like, we need to fucking stop this guy partying.
And then they pull out like the big guns and call Captain Marvel to like stop him.
It didn't seem like that crazy of a situation.
Yeah, not like
a Thanos thing happening. That's a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
Some dudes from space trying to party in Vegas.
Yeah, like
not that big of a deal.
She's just playing bouncer basically to Earth.
Yeah, but you know, it was cool to see like that fight that they had when they like were really fighting and like just like basically turned into an anime battle. And there's like a whole bunch of different like new animations and assets and stuff that they threw into it. That was probably like the best fighting scene of like this whole series so far, I think.
Yeah, it's really cool to see those like pretty high powered heroes like kind of go head to head.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that portion.
Definitely. He's friends with like Loki, who's like a frost giant because he was returned to the frost giants. And he's just huge and has like the same like horns and shit.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it.
It was funny, but yeah, I didn't really care for this one very much.
Yeah,
it definitely didn't leave me. I definitely was like as excited for it as like the rest of them.
Yeah, this one doesn't have like the, oh, that's a cool idea sort of appeal. It was just like, let's have a sillier one, which I'm cool with as well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have like that appeal of weaving it into the Marvel Universe because it's an interesting idea. It's just, here's an idea, let's do it.
I think I would have liked it more if it was like the same concept, except he was like more power hungry. Like as soon as Odin went to Odin's sleep, he's just like, I'm the leader now, you have to do what I say. And he just kind of goes around ruling the different realms or whatever.
Yeah.
So that seems like it'd be more interesting because then it's like an issue.
Yeah. But I guess at the same time, we don't really see a whole lot of frat boy Thor in the MCU that much. So it was cool to kind of see him.
It's really just in like Thor 1, I think, when he's just like really relaxed and wants to kind of go battle and shit like that.
Yeah, but once he's like thrown to Earth, he's like, this sucks. I don't have my sweet hammer.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was kind of fun. It was just weird seeing like Nebula playing craps or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is she there? Or like Drax like throws up on him and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it was just like, let's have characters you know do things to, on Earth. Everybody,
to make it
do
funny.
Things. Yeah.
Let's have Howard the Duck there too.
Right.
I keep forgetting that that's Seth Green as well.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that.
Yeah. But I don't know, pretty solid episode.
Pretty solid. So we got, what, like two more, three more?
Probably like, I think that was what, six?
Probably.
So yeah, I think like two or three more.
For sure.
For sure.
What are we gonna read next week?
And then what do we got next week, Nathan?
What do we have next week? I forget.
We got Venom. Yes, sir. That Venom the movie coming out October 1st.
Yes.
We will be out of the country, so we won't really review the movie until we get back.
Yeah.
But we will have the pod episode out on that release.
For sure.
And then we'll also have an episode prepared for the week they were gone as well. So, yep.
So we're going to read Venom number one by Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman, the run that they just wrapped up. It's very good. I'm excited for you to read it because I've already read it and it's fantastic.
For sure. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. They are a stellar team.
I've always wanted to read like Venom, but I wasn't really sure where to kind of start to where I'd like it, you know? Mm-hmm.
At the time when this was coming out, I was like, okay, this is a very clear like jumping on point because it was just after like Venomized and all that stuff. And I wasn't super keen on reading that.
Right.
Because I was like, it's Venom, but everybody's Venom. And I'm like, I don't know about this.
And they had to come up with all the Venom Pops and stuff like that.
The Venom Pops are pretty cool. So I guess good on them for doing that. But yeah, Venomized, I was like, there's just too much going on here. There's like too much Venom. And then this like really brought it back and focused on just like what makes Venom very cool and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And then it also extrapolates on it so much.
Sweet.
So very good.
All right.
So we're going to read Venom Volume 1 next week.
Sounds good.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to reach out to us, you can send us an email at tradewaiterspod@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at tradewaiterspod. I'm at more like Nate Thick on Twitter.
Dan Nativitad on Twitter.
And that's the show. Talk at you later.
Definitely.
Peace.